Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
903 Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score, 670thescore.com. Good evening. Welcome in. Nick Szczepkowski, Anthony Herron with you tonight for another hour being brought to you by Arlington Acura. When searching for a new Acura, search for ArlingtonAcura.com. Our pleasure now to go out to the hotline. Welcome in Rami Makhlouf. He hosts the co-host of The Big Show at 105.7 in Milwaukee. Cubs and Brewers get underway tomorrow. It's the first of a quick two-game series. Cubs feeling great after taking two out of three from the Nationals. How are the Brewers feeling after a trade deadline that was interesting and hasn't left the Brewers playing great baseball late there, Rami?
I think some Brewers fans were disappointed that they didn't get that starting pitcher that they were hoping for. And I think they liked the Jonathan Scope move when it was made, but they haven't liked what they've gotten out of Jonathan Scope since the trade was made. He's made contact with the baseball about three times total since he put on a Brewers uniform, you guys. So that's not a good clip for him. And overall, I get the sense, and I know my buddy, my cohort from The Fan, Bart Winkler, has been on a couple of your shows on those airwaves in the last couple of days, essentially waving the white flag on the NL Central on behalf of Brewers fans. And I'd say it's about 50-50 split right now in terms of fans who sort of feel like the collapse is happening, at least as far as the division goes. And the other half are still holding out hope that they can make a push and make some problems for those Cubs.
Rami, is there still any chance that maybe Jimmy Nelson could end up coming back? You know, at least for us Cubs folk, we know Yu Darvish is supposed to come back eventually.
Right.
What's the latest on Jimmy Nelson?
If he comes back, guys, it'll be in September. And honestly, I'm not expecting it. The crazy thing about that Jimmy Nelson injury, and the reason why it makes sense that his timetable for a return has been cloudy at best. You'll remember when the season started, they were saying they hoped they had him back by the All-Star break. But the tricky thing about it is no pitcher has ever had that injury that Jimmy Nelson has. Position players have, but no pitcher has ever had that injury that Jimmy Nelson has in that throwing shoulder. If you guys will remember, he injured it down there in Chicago at Wrigley Field, sliding back into first base on a pickoff attempt and sort of jammed that shoulder into the base. And his recovery it's been steady but pretty slow, and there have been a couple times where it seemed to sort of hit a wall, and he's progressing now. He's throwing off a mound, but I can't imagine that he's anywhere near being ready for game action if he's just started throwing off a mound here in the last 3 weeks or so. I would think he's hard-pressed to come back this season. They seem to be holding out hope that it's in September. Well, let's see if he does and what kind of form he'll have when he does come back. You guys, again, this is a complete unknown, a pitcher coming back from that particular injury in his throwing shoulder. So I wouldn't count on it at this point.
You mentioned it, the Jonathan Scope trade right before the deadline. I looked at that just as a baseball observer and said, offensively, man, Milwaukee's gotten nothing from its middle infield so far this year. You add that, and I'm not saying Scope's like all-star perennially or anything, but it's a solid addition. They're going to be noticeably better for already what's a good offense. What has been wrong with it? Has he just looked out of sorts? Has he looked like he hasn't fit in? Like, why has it been not just bad, but I mean, pretty much beyond awful his first couple of weeks?
I think some of it, guys, is you know, this is the first time that this guy has been traded and has had these kinds of expectations put on him. So I think he's pressing maybe a little bit at the plate. And he himself has chalked it up to the fact that, hey, look, he's coming from the American League to the National League, and a lot of these pitchers he hasn't seen before. And he openly admitted that might be part of the problem, that they have a book on him while he doesn't not yet have a book on these pitchers, and he's sort of feeling it out as he goes along. I think he'll eventually figure it out, guys. He's a good hitter and has shown that at the major league level. Again, maybe not a perennial all-star, although he was an all-star last year, And the really weird thing about it is that he was red hot when the Brewers picked him up. If you guys will remember, he was the American League Player of the Year. Christian Yelich was the Player of the Week, excuse me. And Christian Yelich was the National League Player of the Week. And people were like, all right, here we go. We got two guys who are as hot as anybody in Major League Baseball. Stick them in the middle of the lineup. And as you referenced there, Shep, maybe one of the middle infield spots is solved offensively. And here we go, ready to roll. But that has not been the case so far. And the other part that Jonathan Schoop sort of presents a problem with is that the way all these pieces fit, because you guys will remember they picked up Mike Moustakas too, and the original plan when they picked him up was put him at third, stick Travis Shaw over at second, and now second base is solved. You still have a nice big bat at third base and figure out what happens at shortstop from there. But Jonathan Schoop, he's a second baseman by trade, and they've dabbled with him at shortstop a little bit, but I don't think he's a guy who you're going to see over there on a full-time basis by any means. So either his bat or Travis Shaw bat or Mike Moustakas' bat is going to be on the bench on any given night, and that seems like sort of a waste. Just the way the pieces fit when they made those two trades didn't make a lot of sense to some people around here. They like the bats, but just how do you fit them all in the same lineup on the same day?
And Craig Counsell has been the manager for the Brewers same amount of time that Joe Maddon has been the Cubs manager. And despite Joe having that World Series in his back pocket here in Chicago, they're still, because he tends to maneuver the lineup around and, you know, put guys at different positions and tinker around on almost a daily basis at times, he gets questioned about it so much. And there's so many concerns about it here in the city. What's it like in Milwaukee for Counsell with some of the ways that he tends to tinker around with the lineup, especially here with the moves you were referencing made during the All-Star break?
I'm a big fan of Craig Counsell, you guys. I've been working in this market first as a producer and now as a host for a total of 13, going on 14 years. And Craig Counsell is the best manager the Brewers have had in that time. I have no problem saying that. I've said it multiple times on our own show, and I'll say it on your show. I'm a big fan of the guy as a manager, both from the aspect of setting the tone for a clubhouse and for a team and not letting his guys get too high or get too low. He really is sort of a guy who doesn't dwell on wins or losses very long, and he doesn't allow his team to do that either. But from the standpoint that you're talking about in terms of pushing buttons, the way David Stearns, their general manager, has assembled this roster, it's a really deep and really versatile roster, whether you're talking about position players, you're talking about the way that the pitching staff is situated with a very good bullpen and a lot of different options to go to out of the bullpen there. So there's a lot of room for second guessing when you have as many choices as Craig Counsell has. It's sort of a blessing and a curse for him. But I think more times than not, and by a large gap, more times than not, Craig Counsell is pushing the right buttons at the right time, whether it's the lineup or whether it's pulling his pitcher after, you know, four innings and some change like he did with Chase Anderson last night, even though he was sort of rolling. He gave up a couple runs in the first inning and then got going. But Craig Counsell looked at him and he said, you know what, I don't think I'm comfortable with you going against this lineup for the third time. And he pulled him out and went with Josh Hader. And it worked until they caught up to that Brewers bullpen a little bit later on. But I really do think that Craig Counsell, although there is a lot of second guessing because there are a lot of options for him, is pushing the right buttons far more often than he's pushing the wrong ones.
Speaking with Rami Makhlouf, you hear him on 105.7 in Milwaukee, co-host of The Big Show. The Brewers, for a couple of years now, they've been linked, not necessarily making the deal, but been linked to teams that have controllable assets, those controllable team-friendly deals. Jose Quintana was rumored to be possibly going to the Brewers a year ago at the deadline before the Cubs ultimately jumped in and wound up getting him. Christian Yelich, that deal made all the sense in the world for the Brewers, and he's played his butt off when healthy. I'm curious about when they signed Lorenzo Cain this past offseason, and Cain has been fantastic when on the field this year, but did that change the expectations for this year and kind of the outlook of what the Brewers' plan, I guess, is kind of for sustained success here for the next 4 or 5 years?
I think fans started to change their outlook on the Brewers with their performance on the field last year. I think that Lorenzo Cain just sort of fortified that a little bit. Brewers fans were not expecting what they got out of this team last year, which was a team that was in the lead for this division into July before the Cubs put their foot on the gas pedal and started to pull away from this thing, and a team that missed the playoffs by one game. I think a lot of people were looking at this Brewers team and the plan that they had in place. Same way a lot of Cubs fans were looking at that team 5-6 years ago of, okay, they're going to tear this thing all the way down to the ground and build it back up through the farm system. And we've seen other organizations do it. The Royals come to mind. And that often, that usually takes 4 or 5 years, you guys. But the way that David Stearns has done it has really accelerated the process. And I think Brewers fans started to see that last year with the product on the field. And then they saw the acquisitions of Lorenzo Cain and Christian Yelich this offseason, and they went, oh, okay, this is an organization that's trying to win right now. They can't go all out and make the types of moves that some of the larger markets like the Cubs and the Dodgers can make, but this is a team that's going to do everything in their power between the owner, Mark Antanasio, and the GM, David Stearns, to win baseball games now, and I think that, like I said, only fortified that belief amongst Brewers fans after a surprising 2017.
And you're from this area, Rami, so you know the way things have emerged with the Cubs here, where even though they're in a Chicago market, things around Wrigleyville didn't necessarily allow some of the financial benefits of what a city like Chicago was able to get before. Now here in recent years, with some of the rule changes and some of the moves they've made and some of the things they've built, now there's money for the Cubs to spend in a way that there hasn't been historically, and they've taken advantage of it. Milwaukee, kind of let us in on that a little bit, just as you kind of spin things forward with the Brewers organization. They're not a big market by any stretch, but are they set up financially to try to do anything substantial in the hot stove this coming off season?
I don't know how much room there is for financial growth for the Brewers. I mean, you look at the size of the market that they're in and the way that they draw, and it's already off the scales, you guys. They're on a pace to draw 2.8 million fans through the gates at Miller Park, with the 30th size market in all of Major League Baseball. And being the 30th size market in all of Major League Baseball, your TV and your radio contracts are only going to be so large. So I don't know that there's necessarily...
Cut him a check, Rami. What you waiting on?
I just don't know that there's that much opportunity for more earning or more growth. Now, the one thing that does work to their benefit is, for a few years now, the payroll has been pretty low for this Brewers team. So maybe they're socking away some of that money in some sort of war chest, and they can go out and make some sort of move this year. I do think that there is definitely room to add with that payroll, especially with Ryan Braun's contract coming off the books in a couple of years. That's $20 million a year that the Brewers won't have to worry about in the relatively near future. So I think there's some wiggle room financially. I just don't know that the way the financial structure is in baseball, that the Brewers will ever be able to compete with the big boys in terms of payroll.
Rami, before we let you go here, you obviously follow the Brewers closely. You keep an eye on the Cubs because they're division rivals. Cardinals making a little bit of a chase here. National League is extremely flawed. If you had to handicap it, how do you handicap it with, what, 6 weeks, 7 weeks to go in the regular season?
Yeah, and it's what I've been preaching to Brewers fans who are starting to lose belief in this team, is that I think it's wide open, you guys. I think that the Cubs and the Dodgers, you can obviously make a case that on paper they're the two best teams and have the best chance of coming out of the National League and representing the National League in the World Series. But I really think that once it gets to the playoffs, you guys, this thing is wide open. The Cubs and the Dodgers are very good teams. You know, obviously they're playing 18, 19, 20 games over 500, somewhere in that pace. Same thing with the Diamondbacks, but I wouldn't put it past a Phillies team or a Braves team or this Brewers team, that once they get into the postseason and if they're hot and pushing all the right buttons at all the right time, I wouldn't be surprised if the Brewers were in the World Series. Not that I'm picking them, but I wouldn't be surprised if they were. If you ask me to handicap it, it's the Cubs, it's the Dodgers, and then it's everybody else. But I don't think everybody else is behind by a wide margin. And really, you look at the Brewers, and you guys know, you've been watching a lot of postseason baseball down there for the last few years, how important a bullpen is once you get into October, and how much more important it's become in baseball here in the last 3 or 4 years. And that Brewers bullpen, when healthy and when right, with Hader and Jeffress and Knebel, and they added Joaquin Soria and Matt Albers, and they got a young guy down there in Corbin Burnes, who is their highest-rated starter They called him up, moved him to the bullpen. It's a deep and very potent bullpen, you guys. So they're not going to ask a lot of their rotation if they do get into the postseason. They'll ask those guys to keep them in the game and give them a chance to win for four or five innings and then hand it over to those big guns that they got down there in the bullpen. And I think that's a formula that could work if the bats are hot at the right time.
All right, since you brought up the bullpen part, I have to bring up what I was kind of discussing with Anthony right before we brought you on. He asked me if I'm starting my playoff rotation for the Cubs, who starts game one of a series right now? And you look at the numbers, and it's, oh, God, well, there's flaws there. Oh, Hendricks, first innings, he gets killed. Oh, man, Lester's been brutal the last month and a half. My answer wound up being I'd consider doing what the Tampa Bay Rays did a couple months ago and have essentially the opener. It sounds absurd, but it feels like the Brewers are kind of in a similar spot where, yeah, it's not conventional. Yeah, it's not traditional baseball, but, man, it might make the most sense. Are you a little bit on board with that way of thinking, kind of the way the Brewers pitching staff is constructed, or am I just completely out of left field here?
Well, it's a little bit out of left field. I'm open to this whole evolution in baseball, Shep, and I'm cool with it. I'm cool with trying some new ideas, especially if you're the Rays and you're not playing for anything. Go ahead, experiment with some new things. And if the Brewers even wanted to experiment with that early in the season, okay, great, fine. If you're kicking the tires on some new ideas and you want to see if it'll work, that's fine. But I don't know that you can necessarily pull the trigger on that type of move while you're in a playoff push or once you get into the postseason. But I will say this, Craig Counsell will not hesitate over the course of this playoff push, if you ask me, or if they do get into the postseason to pull out that hook real quick, you guys, and go to, when healthy, a very, very strong bullpen, because that's sort of his ace, you guys. That's sort of his stopper, you know what I mean? They don't have that bona fide ace in the starting rotation, although I think the rotation is good. It's not great, but it's good. They got a lot of guys who are, you know, twos and threes in that rotation, if you ask me. No ones, but their ace and sort of the ace up his sleeve is that bullpen. So he'll be quick to go to it, and they'll get their workload and then some, especially if they get clicking again. That bullpen has hit a rough spot here since the start of August. But if they get clicking and they get healthy again down in that bullpen, Craig Counsell will use them plenty, and he'll use them even more as things get tighter here in the race and if they get into the postseason.
Rami, appreciate you taking the time tonight. Great stuff as always. We'll be watching the next couple days, and we'll check in again soon.
Anytime, you guys. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Rami.
Rami Makhlouf from our friends at 105.7 in Milwaukee, co-host of the Big Show there. Yeah, I mean, it's a division that I think it goes the Cubs' way. They take the next two, and you're up seven games in the loss column, and I don't want to say it's over. It's never necessarily over until the math says it is, but you're in pretty damn good shape if you're the Cubs. Then I think you can focus a little bit more on the home field side. It's still, to me, it's about focusing on yourself. Unless you're in the race, unless it's a real race with 2 weeks to go, you can't sit, especially when you're the favorite in this. The Brewers are the underdog. The Brewers are chasing you. Don't worry about what they're doing. Just play quality baseball, and you're going to be in position to be in a big spot come October. And that's the way that I see it. So I hate, like, worrying about the Brewers, but I look at it, and it's kind of one of those things of you can start to get yourself in pretty good position, and the importance of planning things down the road, start taking those steps here in the last 6-7 weeks of the year if you can handle these next couple of days, and then a big four-game series in Pittsburgh that would essentially eliminate them from playoff contention if you do that right, too.
Is being ahead X number of games in the loss column, is it really better than being ahead X number of games in the win column?
Well, think about
it. I've always wondered.
If you've played, like in the Brewers' case, they've played, what, four or five more games than the Cubs, mm-hmm. and they have four or five more losses than the Cubs, like that's, you can't get those back. Like, those are gone.
Right.
Entirely, like, it's already decided that the difference in what the Cubs are going to do, the Brewers already have the negative in their, I guess, department or category in those extra games.
But you can win more games. So, like, the lead, like, you know, say they win the next two against Milwaukee, and then they'll be three games up in the win column. The Brewers could win three more games at that point and have the same amount of wins as the Cubs after that.
Right, but with five extra games, then all you're looking at is essentially the Cubs have they have five chances then to get that one win. Does that make sense?
But they're going to play the same amount of games by the end of the
sure.
year. So the variables will even
but
out.
No
by
doubt
the end of
about
the season.
It. But when you look at that part, the games already played, the Brewers can't gain anything from those. They've already lost what they can lose from that. Where that if they're tied in the win column, that's fine and dandy. The Cubs essentially have, if they have four games to make up, five games to make up, all right, well, you go 1-3 in these four games, and that's your difference in the one-game difference at the end of the year.
But there are still additional opportunities for the Cubs to lose more games and thus decrease their own quote-unquote lead in the loss column.
Definitely.
So like
if
after the next two games they have a five-game lead in the loss column and then they lose their next five games, they will then be tied. And the games aren't over at that point. I've always found it odd because we mentioned the loss column with these, and it's not just you, it's not a Shep thing, but we mentioned the loss column as though the season's over or as though the loss column doesn't even out, but the win column does even out. I've never quite gotten, just from a mathematical standpoint, they're going to play the same amount of games at the end of the year. So whether it's the win column or the loss column, it just seems like whatever the lead is in totality is what the true math of the statement really equates to, more so than the loss versus the win column.
Yeah, the way I look at it, losses are gone. They're gone. They're completely lost causes, and you're not getting a chance to simply not have a loss.
Right. Like with that point, I see, like, and some people on the text line were making the same point. Like, the Brewers will never this season lose any less than 54 games. So I get that. Like, they have at least that many losses. If they lose the next two, they're going to have lost at least 56 games this year.
I know it's impossible because they play each other, what, 8 or 10 more times,
right,
the Cubs and Brewers do.
And then there are also opportunities for the Cubs to lose more games, though.
Yeah. Well, no doubt. Yeah. If the Brewers were to win out and the Cubs were to win out, the Brewers could not catch the Cubs based off of, or the Cubs could have that leeway of, all right, five games up in the loss column, you can lose four of these things, and the Brewers still have to win out, and even at that, they would still finish a game behind you.
Or if the Cubs are three games up in the win column and they both win out, they're still going to be three games up from that column as well. Like, both columns will end up equaling out by the end of the year is my point.
That's Anthony Herron. I'm Nick Szepkowski. We do have to pause for a timeout. You have news.
I do.
Professionally,
I have exciting news.
That you're going to share. I just saw somebody running around the hallway that we might spend a couple of minutes with here.
Good
before
idea.
10 o'clock as well. It's Anthony Herron, Nick Szepkowski with you, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Welcome back in, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score, 670thescore.com. It is Nick Szepkowski and Anthony Herron up until 10 o'clock tonight. That's when Julie DeCaro will be in this evening.
Whoa.
And Les Grobstein from midnight until 5 a.m. tonight as well. As always, 312-644-6767, your telephone number to call this hour, being brought to you by Arlington Acura. When searching for a new Acura, search for ArlingtonAcura.com. All right, so we've been holding off the news. It doesn't involve me whatsoever. I just happen to be the one that gets to do the drum roll for you and whatnot on all of this.
Well, this one doesn't involve you.
Right, yeah, this one doesn't at all. In any way, shape, or form. So I'll do the drum roll.
All right.
Mr. Anthony Herron, what is the breaking news you have for Score listeners and the Anthony Herron fans out in the radio world?
There are very few things that I can say have been a dream of mine for a long time. When I got to play professional football, play in the NFL, that was certainly a dream that got realized. And Shep being on my Wikipedia page, that was a dream, a lifelong sort of dream that I got to live out for a bit. One of the things I didn't get to do when I was still playing in the league was I never got to play for the Bears. So I'm not about to say I'm coming out of retirement. I've not been signed by the Bears, but what I will get to do.
They do need pass rush. That never got addressed.
They could use some of that. I don't have a lot of cartilage left in my knees, though, to try and pursue anything like that with the Bears. But what I am going to get to do is one of the callers even mentioned it earlier tonight. I've had a role with Fox 32 as of late, making some appearances there, and that's going to be expanded in the manner that actually for the Bears postgame show with Fox 32 being the new Bears partner for their pregame and postgame shows. And of course, with the NFC package being on Fox, almost all of the Bears games, at least the ones that aren't on national television, will be on Fox 32. So this season, I'm actually going to join Jim Miller and Corey Wooten and, of course, Luke Kanellis leading the show for us. I'm going to be on the Bears postgame show every Sunday throughout the fall. So it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm really excited about that, growing up here and growing up a Bears fan. And getting to, while I didn't get to play for the team at any point when I was with the league, that would have been a very, very nice way to kind of cap things off. I played at Detroit and Green Bay, so I was in the NFC Central, what is now the NFC North. Played against the Bears, but never actually got to compete for the Bears in any capacity. But being on the Bears postgame show for Fox 32 this coming season, really excited about that. It's
woohoo!
Yes, that's my emotions about the situation. I'm really
looking forward to that. Congratulations.
Thank you.
That is a blast. That's going to be fun to watch post-game show each and every. Hopefully after, and I guess all depends on what you consider successful, but I expect,
a
7-9 record would be pretty successful for this team. It should be an interesting team. This is the most intriguing Bears team I think that there has been probably since the start of 2014. This is the most interest I've had in a Bears team, and it's not because of expectations. It's easier to jump on board and say, okay, team can go and chase the Super Bowl, and I'm on board with it. I am legit curious how this thing looks and how much the offense, especially, it's going to be the story all year long, how that grows, who emerges defensively as someone pass rush-wise. It's going to be a fun time for you to get in on the ground floor of hopefully what is something that is a team that's competing for playoff spots with some regularity, because that's something that they have failed to do for the vast majority of my football viewing life. But now you have another mission that I'm going to put you in charge of here.
What's
if
that?
You're in charge of the postgame show and you're going to be smiling on everyone's television sets on Fox 32 after a big Bears win, probably after a couple of big Bears losses as
that's
well.
Likely, yeah.
You're going to need a man to step in for you on Final Word every once in a while.
Oh, that's true.
And I know just the guy that can do it.
Do you? You got a recommendation?
Yeah. Herb Chris? Lawrence is right across the glass over there. He seems fantastic at it.
Hey, stop it. Okay? Okay. All right.
No, I'm just saying, if you can pass that phone number along or an email address along to me and reach out to whoever it is, I will gladly send an email of myself looking good and dapper in a suit as well.
You do own a suit, too. Though. I've seen it.
A couple. I had to wear one to a wedding on Saturday. Oh, yeah.
Check you out.
Yeah, a couple of them.
She's got multiple suits.
You know, two-for-one sale is how I go about buying suits.
We need a suit sponsor is what we need.
We really do. Yeah, that is a must-have.
It's hard to get those in radio because nobody would get to see the material.
Well, you're a TV guy now. You can get the roll credits at the end of the show, end of the post-game show, and wardrobes brought to you by
talk to Lou
Canellis
about
this.
That. You know, since me and Lou are BFFs now, Lou's got a very tiny baby at this point as well. Maybe we can bond over a suit deal at some point as we're swapping stories about diapers here in the near future. See if Lou's got a good suit deal over there at 32.
Yeah, congratulations are running through here on the text line at 67011. Congrats, Anthony. Love your insight and look forward to watching. Congrats, Anthony, coming in from the 310. I don't know what the 310 zip code is.
That's Cali.
That's California.
That's the LA crowd.
See, you're big in Pac-12 country is what it is. It's probably those Stanford people you were making fun of a week or so ago.
Yeah, right.
Man, these guys,
those Stanford folks who don't show up for their own
team. That's right. Yeah, these guys have no interest in the great product that's been put in front of their face for the last 10 years or so. But no, that is awesome. Congratulations. We'll be watching it. We'll be enjoying it the whole way. And hopefully it's a fun year for you doing that part of it.
Yeah, and Jim got to be on with a couple of defensive guys, of course, in recent years when he's been on the Bears postgame show over on NBC Sports Chicago. So he'll at least be used to that. He'll be used to a couple of defenders trying to help him hold things down after
the Bears
game.
Just keep Hugh Douglas away from him.
Oh,
because
yeah.
Because I'm sure he probably still has flashbacks.
A lot of pass protectors tried to do that over the years unsuccessfully.
Yeah, well, Blake Brockerbeier did him no favors on that fateful January afternoon at Soldier Field. 312-644-6767 is the telephone number to call. Nick Szczepkowski, Anthony Herron. Anthony Herron, the co-host, you heard it right there, of the Bears postgame show on Fox 32 all year this year coming up. So it's going to be exciting times. You can check out our guy after every Bears game on Fox 32 here locally. Should be fun to check out his work as well. Far Northwest Side, Joe always has thoughts on the Cubs. Looks like that's the case again tonight. What's up, Joe?
Hey, good Joe. Evening, Shep, and good evening, Anthony. How you doing there?
Good.
Good, Joe.
You know, Sean Lester, whose ERA from the middle of July on is roughly approaching, say, 11, you know, would it be wise to maybe move Lester to a 10-day DL? Because I remember about a year ago, you know, he was on the DL, what I called tired arm, which was placed by Montgomery. But if Hendricks and Quintana somehow don't step it up, you know, coupled by Montgomery, who virtually had, what, one decent start out of his last, what, four or five, how do the Cubs fill the starting rotation, especially with Chatwood, you know, being demoted to the bullpen? Or do the Cubs somehow concentrate in getting another you know, going for another trade or another pitcher to add that I call the Cole Hamels collection after getting him. He's doing phenomenal. Or do you roll the dice with, say, some, you know, September call-ups? But I'll listen to your answer, guys. Thanks.
I think it's one of those that you have to be standings watching if that's what you want to have happen. Like, you're at that point where if you're the Cubs, in order to do that, I know John Lester's been brutal, but you still have a division to go out and win. You have home field advantage, and say what you want about it. Oh, it doesn't matter as much in baseball. You'd rather have it than not have it, right?
Right.
Like, at the end of the day, you have the Dodgers in a best-of-seven series. Would you prefer to be playing four games in Dodger Stadium or four games at Wrigley Field? Like, it's not the be-all, end-all of anything, but it's one of those things that, yeah, if given a choice, I'd like to play an extra home game. That'd be cool. I'd be on board with that. But in order to do that, in order to give that rest to John Lester, which I don't think it's a bad idea by Joe. I think it's one of those things you saw last year at the All-Star break, if you remember. Lester got destroyed.
Just got rocked
by the Pirates. I think we were on after the game, literally the last day before the All-Star break, and he gave up, I want to say, 10 runs in the first inning. I mean, before the Cubs even came to bat, it was like, all right, well, John's on a plane home to Atlanta for the next 4 days. And they put him on the DL shortly after to have him just skip a start. Wasn't necessarily dead arm as much as, all right, you're probably fatigued because you're 33 years old. Mm-hmm. Just go take some time off, get away, give yourself a mental break if that's what you need. That could be what it could be, something as simple as that of, yeah, his velocity has been there, but it could be something as simple as that, just using precedent of the Cubs doing it a year ago. But in order to invoke that, in order to be able to do that, you can't go and send him on a 10-day disabled list if you're only up in the division by a couple games. You can't go and do that if you're fighting for home field advantage,
right,
and you've got a one-game or two-game lead over the Diamondbacks or Dodgers or Phillies or Braves that are right there. So until there is separation in the standings that way, I think it's a pipe dream, but I don't think it's a bad idea at the same time. Appreciate the telephone call, Joe.
Yeah, I mean, if you have the ability to, there's so many things that this roster has allowed Theo and Jed and Joe to do, and placing guys on the DL at different points and not really having to worry about losing ground in the standings. And at this point, without Chris Bryant even gaining ground in the standings, because they're so deep and because they're so talented in the lineup, you know, the pitching staff, they've been able to withstand the struggles of the starting pitching, whether guys have been healthy or not, and in the bullpen, whether guys have been healthy or not. So could they get away with it? They probably could, but they're, you know, it's not a comfortable position to be in right now to do it, because John Lester, for the vast majority of the season, was really the lone pitcher who was consistent start in and start out. So at some point, it's probably worth considering to do it, especially you win these next two against the Brew Crew. Then, yeah, maybe there's more comfort to go ahead and say, we can risk 10 days here. We can have him miss a couple of starts and be out and just rest for a bit for some arm fatigue. I mean, I'm sure Joe Maddon would like to be able to do that at some point before you actually get to the playoffs. Either that, or like I mentioned earlier, Yu Darvish comes back healthy, then maybe you go to a six-man rotation and get six different starters rotating through, and maybe that's a way that you finish the season off before, if you get comfortable with things, before moving Mike Montgomery back to the bullpen, because that's likely where things will end up if there's some relative level of comfort with your five starters once Yu Darvish comes back and you got Cole Hamels in the mix. Then you don't necessarily need Mike Montgomery. He does you more good out of the pen than he does if he's one of your five starters as well.
That's Anthony Herron. I'm Nick Szczepkowski, 312-644-6767, your telephone number to call on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Welcome back in, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score, 670thescore.com. Nick Szczepkowski and Anthony Herron in tonight. We'll be back again tomorrow as well, four hours instead of three.
All right.
So we got to get ready for that extra hour. What are we going to do with that? Who knows what exactly that's going to entail? But a man that's here hours before his shift begins.
I'm in the right place at the right time, not the right place at the wrong time.
I mean, Lombardi time was always showing up, what, 5 minutes early? Setting your clock ahead 5 minutes
Lombardi
early.
Lombardi and the people that wear the urine, yellow, and vomit green uniforms can KMA.
Yeah, but they were always those on folk time. Grobber time's like 2 hours and 15 minutes early.
Apparently.
First time I ever saw a Bear-Packer game was in 1963. I was 11 years old at Wrigley Field, and I saw the Bears beat the crap out of them. That was a big thrill. But When they beat him 61-7 in 1980, that was even better because it avenged the opening day loss when Chester Markle had a kick blocked right back to him by Alan Page, and then he walked into the end zone while the Bears looked like they were frozen in cement. And Packer fans to this day have not shut their big fat mouths about that game. But then they got walloped 61-7. They ran the score up on us. You know what? As we say in Yiddish, Kishmirn Tachas.
That's good old Grover. In the middle of August, that Packers-Bears rivalry for you, is that like your... In terms of like a sports hate, sports dislike that you have,
that's
has there ever been any other team, Chicago rival or not?
It's 366 days in a leap year.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Like, has there ever been Pistons of the late 80s, early 90s? Like, has there ever been one that you despise
boys,
as much as the Packers?
The Bears, I mean, the Bulls stuck it up there, you know what, in 1991. The Bad Boys' whole run ended with that four-game sweep, especially when they beat the daylights out of them in the Palace of Auburn Hills. And the Pistons led by Bill Laimbeer, that big fat scumbag.
That's what I always said to Big Ant. Big Ant came across him in a parking lot.
And Isaiah Thomas. And they just walked off the court. And Dennis Rodman, a future Bull, he was doing it too. So was Mark Aguirre. But you notice James Edwards and John Sally, they played with the Bulls a few years later. They didn't walk off the court. They stayed out there and shook hands with people. And Chuck Daly did too, rest his soul. But the bottom line is, yeah, they won some championships. They had beaten the Bulls the previous few seasons. But when it really mattered in 91 in the Palace, they took their brooms and something the Pistons never did to the Bulls. They never swept them.
So that hatred for the Pistons then, was that requited in some way? Has that eased because of the way the Bulls started to thump them for a while in a dissimilar manner to now the Packers have been dominant over the Bears?
No, Laimbeer and Ricky Mahorn, they're still bums.
Okay.
And right. Laimbeer, when I did radio for the Chicago Sky for 3 years, and everybody in the league, including some of the Detroit Shock players, they hated Laimbeer then. They hated playing for him. They hated going against him. And now he coached the New York Liberty for a while. Now he's coaching the Las Vegas Diamonds, putting scumbag out in Vegas out there.
Well, and that's what Big Ant, when he played for the Lions for a couple of years there. Didn't you stumble across him in the middle of a...
In a parking lot. Yep. He was just... I attended a Pistons game, or it may have even been a Sky game that he was coaching. But no, I think it was a Pistons game, and he was there, and he was the coach for the Sky at that point in time.
The Shock.
Oh, Shock. Yeah, sorry. For the Detroit Shock. And I was in my car leaving the parking lot, and he was walking by on the way to his car. And I was on the phone with my dad at this point. And I remember saying on the phone to my father, Bill Laimbeer is walking by the car right now. And I got my foot on the brake, and I'm seriously considering taking my foot off the brake because Laimbeer is right in front of my front bumper. I guess if that would have happened, I probably wouldn't be here doing this show and talking to you guys right now.
No, but you'd be considered a big hero.
Yeah, I mean, just the thought, the rage that came over me in that moment of seeing Bill Laimbeer. I remember, like, the hair is starting to stand up on my forearms right
he
now.
Was
just
a
remembering
bum
what that felt like.
When he played it, you know, he flunked out of Notre Dame twice. Not once, but twice.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know there was a place you could flunk out of twice.
Laimbeer
found a way.
Yeah, you do it once, and I thought that was kind of, at
this
least
day,
back in those days.
To this day, he said he's glad they did what they did walking off. He says he would do the same thing again. Ricky Mahorn, who succeeded Laimbeer as coach of the Detroit Shock. And I talked to Ricky I remember they had beaten the Sky, and Detroit was already in the play. And I just said, Ricky, good luck in the playoffs. He couldn't have been more nasty, more mean. I just said, good luck in the playoffs. And he was just being a jerk.
Really? Don't you wish me luck, you SOB.
Yeah. It's Nick Shepkowski and Anthony Herron finishing up here tonight. Les Grobstein showing up a couple hours early for his shift, so wanted to say hello to you. What's your expectation for the Bears this year?
I think they're still going to have a tough time getting out of the cellar because the division is tough. Minnesota is the best team in the division. Green Bay is the second best, and as long as number 12 stays healthy, they'll still be a playoff contender. If he goes down, you saw how worthless they were last year once he got hurt and he was out. And as far as Detroit, they're kind of like a wild card, no pun intended. They're like a team that you can't – Matthew Stafford is very dangerous, and he's given the Bears problems, but I've also seen days where the Lions show up and they're like real disinterested, and there were some games – I mean, last year, the Bears won four games all against the AFC North. And when they played Cincinnati and also Baltimore, both of those teams look disinterested in playing for whatever reason. And if, you know, they weren't going to lose to the Cleveland Browns last year, and the other one that they probably weren't going to have too much difficulty with, because Pittsburgh, no matter how better they are than the Bears, Pittsburgh is something like 1-14 lifetime against the Bears in Chicago. They've beaten them one time. It was in 1995 at Soldier Field. Other than that, I mean, they never lost, the Bears never lost to the Steelers, rather, in Wrigley Field. And we're talking some teams with the Steel Curtain and Mel Blount and Mean Joe Green and Franco Harris and all those guys. And the Bears did pretty well against them. Go figure.
Yeah, that's an all-time weird one, because outside of the Patriots, the Steelers probably have been, yeah, maybe the 49ers in my lifetime too, but they've kind of been the standard bearer of what how you run an NFL organization. And the Bears, in my 32-plus years on Earth, I was born 5 days after they won Super Bowl 20. The Bears have not shown a whole lot of competence at the NFL in the NFL.
So you weren't even alive. You weren't alive the last time they won at Candlestick Park. They beat them 26-10 in 1985, and that was revenge for the NFC title game the year before, where they were shut out. Jim McMahon was not available because he had had a lacerated kidney.
Yeah, that sounds painful.
And when the game was ending, a couple of the 49ers went up to Walter Payton and said, next time bring your offense with you. And he didn't forget that. Some of the other Bears didn't, and they loved sticking it to him. Unfortunately, they never beat the 49ers in San Francisco again until they moved into Santa Clara.
Hell, I don't remember in my Bears fandom, until they won, was it the opening week, the first game at the new stadium?
Yeah.
They won there on Sunday Night Football.
They were down by 14.
They
were down by 14. The Niners just gave that game away.
Outside of that game, I don't remember the Bears being competitive in San Francisco.
No, they got blown out.
It was like the annual ass-whooping that you signed up for.
The one time they faced Singletary.
It's 49-3.
The one time they faced Singletary, it was something like 10-3 or 13-3. It was not a blowout. But all the other games, I mean, they were absolutely smoked every time they play there. They beat them in 1985, 26-10, and of course they won the whole thing that year.
That's
when you look at all the sports stories that played out yesterday, and you're going to have a few hours to talk about this overnight as you've gotten accustomed to over the years. Which ones are kind of most intriguing for you? You know, whether it was Tiger, of course, the Cubs last night with the Grand Slam and David Bode, or even today leading in with Roquan Smith and him finally, you know, ending the holdout and them coming to terms.
Roquan Smith's signing is the most important thing as far as I'm concerned. What Bode did, that was great. That was beautiful. That was kind of cute. But it was one regular season game. They haven't won anything yet. We'll see what they do with the Brewers tomorrow and on Wednesday. But Roquan Smith, he's part of the future of this Bears team.
Right.
Hopefully he will put number 12 in mustard and relish on the ground. And he'll do the same thing, hopefully, to the Minnesota Vikings. When they play them, they're going to have to do certain things, because Minnesota, they were loaded last year, and they're going to be loaded again. And the Lions, you know, Matthew Stafford, he's had some mediocre games, and he's also had some real butt-kicking games. But Lions fans will always remember Calvin Johnson, and I will remember it too. He got robbed. The Lions won that game. One person in Soldier Field thought that that was a good call, taking that catch away, and that was Lovie Smith. He's the only person that thought that was, well, of course that was incomplete. Well, that was Lovie. What do you expect him to say?
Grobber, so where does the Packers absolute hate come from? Where does it come from when you went to your first game when you were 11 years old, or what is it?
Well, some of these Packer fans, and some of the women showed up there from Wisconsin as well, and they were just as nasty as the men. They were all, I mean, you know, there was one game in 1968, the Bears, they needed a win over Green Bay, and they win the division. Green Bay was eliminated. They were mathematically out, and they're out there, and they're just acting so obnoxious and so pathetic. And I went to several games in Lambeau, and also the old Shrine game they used to play at County Stadium, which was nothing but a preseason. That was in the old days when people used to actually try to win those games. Today, they don't care about those exhibitions. They basically, no matter what you say, they hate us. Well, we don't hate you. Yeah, bull. You hate the Bears' guts. You hate Bears' fans.
I assume you've heard the song they play. They've actually got a
theme
song.
What, the Bears
song
still suck?
Yes,
that thing is,
that
was a takeoff on the replay that gave Don Majkowski a touchdown pass to Sterling Sharp. And, yes, he was over the line of scrimmage. And, yes, that should not have been reversed. By the way, the rule was you could not reverse a play like that in those days. Today you could, but you could not then. The Bears got robbed, and that's why the Bears voted it out for a couple of years. You know, replay should not have been brought back. But Packer fans are still going to make fun of that thing. You know what? Like I said, Kishmir and Tuchus.
What's coming up on the show tonight?
Oh, we got Bum of the Week coming up just after 1 o'clock. That's always a lot of fun, and we'll have fun with that too. But we want to talk about Roquan Smith. A lot of fans last night, when I said that they were lucky to win that game, some fans called and they were very belligerent about, how can you say that? You can't say they were lucky. Well, let me get this right. Two-hit batsman and a ground ball that should have been an error. It was called a base hit. Okay, either way. And then the grand slam and stuff. I said, you know, Bodie, God bless him. He did a great job, got the ball up there, and he blasted it out. Bottom line is they were lucky to win that game. Anybody want, and I'm a Cub fan. I'm a bigger Cub fan than any of these people that call in, but they were lucky. And if people want me to act like a cheerleader and wave pom-poms, I'm not going to do that.
Grobber, appreciate you taking the time. We'll be listening here at midnight tonight. Julie DeCaro is coming up next. Thank you tonight. David Haw, Rami Makhlouf joined us as well. Talk some Cubs and Brewers. Chris Dixon and Herb Lawrence on the other side of the glass as well. Phenomenal job as always. Julie DeCaro coming up next. For Anthony Herron, I'm Nick Shepkowski, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Mazel tov.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly Auto Parts.